morning, everyone. Welcome to the Planet FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6. My name's Judy and I'm an alcoholic and I will be chairing our meeting this morning. Would you all like to help me open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I'll now read the preamble, the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Thank you all for joining us this morning. Today our speakers are Sally, Scott and Jen, and they will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. So, Sally, would you like to start us off, please?
Thanks, Judy. Good morning. My name is Sally and I'm an alcoholic. It's a real honour to be here this morning and sharing with you. I'm going to share about my experience, strength and hope. So what it was like, how I got sober and what it's like now. And gosh, you know, I find it hard to remember what it was like. I mean, I can remember, but it's hard to take myself back there because I don't, you know, I did lots of things that I wasn't proud of. I saw myself as a disappointment. I knew that I had a problem with alcohol, but I didn't know what it was like. I didn't know how to stop it. I couldn't get my head around what it might be like to not have that crutch to lean on. I drank when I was happy, I drank when I was sad, and I drank in the times in between. And over a period of time, my drinking got worse, and, you know, I had developed a reliance on alcohol, and I couldn't stop. And I didn't like to not be in control of my life, so it was hard for me to get my head around not being able to put down a glass. I didn't like how it made me feel. I didn't like how I was. I didn't like how I treated my friends, my family, my loved ones. I found it hard to get through a day's work. I found it hard to say yes to anything. I would rather be at home on my own with the comfort of a bottle. And that was lonely, and yeah, it makes me sad to think about what it was like when I was drinking. And it was only at the suggestion of some friends that I should do something about it that first led me into a treatment centre. And I did go willing because I did want to stop drinking. I was full of fear. I was so frightened. I'd spent the last period of time just being totally out of control and overwhelmed with everything. And it was my first introduction to AA via that treatment centre. I spent 28 days in there. I dried out. I started to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step program. I went to meetings and I listened. I didn't really hear or understand what people were sharing about how they got sober. And I came out of that treatment centre and I didn't do all the suggested things. I hadn't reached out to people and got their numbers. I hadn't joined a home group. I did a few things. In AA, we do a daily reflection every day, and I did that every morning. I didn't have a higher power that I could reach out to. And it didn't take long where I couldn't say no to a drink. You know, in AA, we talk about a drink only being an arm's length away, and my God, it was just... I just had no defence against picking up a drink. And after a period of time, you know, I found out what a rock bottom was because I hit it and I hit it hard. So I picked myself up and I went back to that same treatment centre for 7 days. And I made a commitment then that I would do things differently. I committed 110% to getting sober. And I started to do the things that people talked about in meetings. I got a sponsor. I got a home group. In AA, we talk about doing 90 meetings in 90 days. In my early days of sobriety, I did 123 meetings in 90 days because I did everything in my power to keep myself sober. And that meant not being idle. I was scared. I was scared that I had no defence against picking up a drink. So my sponsor started to work with me on the steps. I kept going to lots of meetings. I didn't do one daily reflection. I did 3 daily reflections a day from different books. And, you know, the desire to drink didn't leave me straight away. I practiced the things that people talked about. I practiced praying. For a start, it didn't feel natural at all. I had had no, I'd had no spiritual connection before in my life. But my sponsor suggested just to practice, and I did. I practiced reaching out to something bigger than myself. And you know, after a period of time, I actually started to believe that there was something greater than myself looking out for me, and that, you know, there was a future. And with that came a sense of freedom and a sense of lightness and an understanding that actually I wasn't doing this alone anymore. And you know, I just kept doing those things. I've been sober for 3.5 years now, and my life has changed immensely. I have a wonderful family who, that hasn't changed, they were always wonderful, but they have continued to support me and love me. But the biggest change is I can say I'm such a much nicer daughter. I'm a much more loving partner. I am a stepmom. I can look after animals. I am responsible. I have a great job. And just, you know, none of that would have been possible if I was still drinking. I'm much freer and I'm much lighter and I can walk around with a smile on my face. And you know, back then when I think about it, God, I was fighting hangovers just constantly. If I didn't have a glass in my hand, if I didn't have a drink, I was always hungover, and that was awful. And I don't have to be like that. I'm so grateful to be sober. I'm so grateful to AA. I'm really grateful that you've invited me along to share this morning, Judy, and I look forward to hearing everyone else share. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sari. That was lovely. And I'd like to ask Scott to share with us now. Thank you very much, Scott.
Good morning. My name's Scott and I'm an alcoholic. And it's, it's really nice to be here and, and talk about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Yeah, and my experience, strength and hope. I always thought alcoholics were the guys that drank sherry out of brown paper bags and by Grafton Bridge there, and they couldn't hold down a job and didn't pay any tax and that sort of thing. I grew up in a family where, you know, I was sort of taught to work hard and play hard, and that's what my family did. And so when I started drinking, I you know, drank like a fish, and I loved it from the very start. Little did I know that I was an alcoholic in those at that time, but it was like the missing thing in my life. You know, it was this, like this magic elixir that just made me feel comfortable and part of, and not, you know, the scared little boy that I was inside. And it wasn't long that I was using drugs and alcohol on a daily basis, and I continued to do that and work hard, and I, you know, was quite successful in a financial sense. But my life was just a disaster, really, and in terms of relationships and, yeah, being responsible and being a good brother and father and husband and son, you know, or as an employee, you know, I'd be telling lies, and because really all I wanted to do was to get wasted. You know, I'd just wake up, I didn't really want to face life. All I wanted to do was, you know, to hide away from all these feelings that made me feel so uncomfortable and full of fear, and it was awful. And it just got worse and worse. You know, I stopped doing the things, you know, like sailing and gardening and the things I loved doing. I just eventually just woke up and, you know, all I wanted to do was get wasted, you know, and I used to smoke pot before I got to work, you know, and I thought, oh, as long as I don't have a drink in the mornings, I'm fine, you know, but really, you know, I was, you know, it was the sort of the start of the end. The road was just getting worse and worse and narrower, and life just seemed not worth living, you know, and I was completely paranoid and depressed, and so I sought refuge. I went to my doctor and I asked him if I had deep-rooted psychological problems or was I an addict, and a few days later I found myself at Queen Mary Hospital in Hamner Springs, you know, in a rehab, and I went to my first meeting and I heard this guy, Graham, share his story. He was from Christchurch. And I just identified. It was the first time in my life that I felt connected to the world. And, I mean, he'd been bankrupt, he'd been to jail and so forth, and none of those things had happened to me. Thank God. I don't know how, but anyway. But I identified with how his thinking and his feelings and how he reacted to life. And I thought I was sort of a bit too good to be there, really, and they were lucky to have me there. But I identified with the stories, and I knew deep down that when I started drinking, I couldn't stop, and I was an alcoholic. And from then till today, I haven't had the need to pick up a drink, and I've just followed what's suggested at AA, and you get a sponsor in AA, which is like a sort of a life coach, mentor kind of thing. And my sponsor used to say to me, don't try and figure out how it works. It's just like baking a cake. You do this, this and this, and you'll stay sober and your life will just become marvellous. And that's what's happened to me. It's just incredible. I missed my daughter's first day at school. My sobriety date's the 27th of September, and my daughter's birthday's the 1st of October, and she was 4 then, and I missed her first day at school, which was really sad. You know, any parent will know that your kid's first day at school is, you know, it's a very special thing. And so I was really sad. But now, you know, she's nearly 29 and she's a raging success in London. And, you know, my kids love me. Before, I used to say to my ex, you know, sort your children out. And I was just so selfish and... yeah, I was just... The only thing that mattered to me was getting wasted and getting out of it, because I couldn't handle life, my feelings and my thoughts and my fears and people, you know, my fear of people and, you know, not having enough money. And it was just... It was a horror show, you know. You know, suicide back then seemed like a really, really... good option, you know, which it's just such a it's a delicate thing to talk about, but in a way you could argue that it's a very selfish act, you know what I mean. And I made a decision, if I hadn't had my two little children, I think I probably would have stopped myself, but I just couldn't. I love them so much, I just didn't want to dump that shit on them, you know, and so I didn't. And so, yeah, I guess I identified as an alcoholic once that I'd heard, you know, been to my first meeting. And then the pain of, you know, getting sober, it's really hard. And but my life now is, they talk about in AA, the promises as being having a life beyond your wildest dreams. And I thought I'd be rocking around the world in Learjets, you know. And now I just, you know, I'm just so happy just with a simple life, very modest. And yeah, it's just marvellous. I can't talk about and encourage people more strongly than to, you know, try AA, because it really, it's just absolutely revolutionized my life. And, you know, I'm just a happy camper, and I don't want to drink again. And it's just an awful, horrible, miserable existence. So I'm really pleased to be here, and I hope that what I've said can make sense to any listeners this morning. So thank you very much. I'll leave it there.
Thank you so much, Scott. That was lovely. And Jen, would you like to finish off first, please?
Oh, thank you so much, Judy. It's been such a beautiful meeting. It really has. And I heard something today that I needed to hear. So hopefully those of you that are listening today also hear something. So my name is Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is the 5th of January, 2019. So I'm just over 5.5 years sober. And my home group is the Akron Big Book meeting here in Auckland, in New Zealand. So I'll just talk you through briefly about, you know, what it was like for me, what happened, how I found recovery, and what it's like now. So to this day, I believe that I was born an alcoholic. My earliest memories of being a child were just simply not fitting in. I was a square peg in a round hole, you know, and that's my memory of my childhood. We didn't have alcohol in the house, and for the reasons that I'll, you know, touch on a little bit later. When I was 17 years old, I went off to university, and on my first day, my actual first day in the afternoon, the third years took the first years down to the pub for drinks. And for me, what that did was it gave me, for the first time in my whole life, a sense of ease and comfort that I'd never experienced before. But it also came with, it didn't come with a stop button, unfortunately. So my memory of that day was literally glass after glass of beer after jug, and that was how pretty much I did 3 years of tertiary education. I'm not proud of it, you know. I look back now, I used to think that I drank like everyone else, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday afternoon. But my drinking quickly became Tuesday, Wednesday, and every other day in between. It it's a miracle that I finished my education, but I did. And I went off to teach in Australia, and that for the first time gave me this sense of responsibility, and it did seem to curb my drinking, to be honest. I wouldn't be drinking Monday through Thursday, but from Friday afternoon onwards, I exhibited the traits of a binge drinker. That's what I thought I was. I was a binge drinker. I moved up to London, and I met my partner, and of all things, all of these years later, we're still together, and he is a normal drinker, and we, from the optics, had normal drinking patterns, you know, one drink at the pub after work, sharing a bottle of wine over dinner. You know, I didn't think at that point that really there was a problem. But what I can tell you is 6 years of expatting around the world and living a life of absolute privilege just gave me a warrant to drink. Their environments, you know, their functions, the events. I have memories of dressing up in a beautiful gown and hair and makeup and out the door and arriving home 10 hours later was the cat that got dragged in. It wasn't a pretty look. And again, I used to think that everyone else drank like me, but it simply wasn't the case. I was the one that was just using it to find comfort and ease, and that's been the common denominator, the comfort and the ease. When we returned to New Zealand, again, I was working in the event management field, and quite often I was the one responsible for others, you know, a ballroom of 1,000 people, and it was my job to make sure that people were safe and were getting home and were managing their alcohol consumption responsibly. But when I stopped work and had a child and my life changed, I experienced depression after the birth of my child, and that was a common thread that then sort of started to, you know, become part of my story. It was the mental health challenges. When they went off to school, when we just had one child, when they went off to school, suddenly my life changed. I didn't have a sense of purpose. And again, that mental health became a challenge. About 8 years ago, I thought it was a great idea when I was heading home after buying some groceries to also buy some vodka on the way home. And I'd never drunk hard liquor like this. And I drank it because it just gave me comfort and ease again. But that drinking, that behaviour quickly became morning, afternoon and night drinking, and was pretty much my rock bottom. Drinking home alone when the world was off at work for the day, I was sitting alone in a chair and drinking to blot out my day, setting an alarm so I could go off to school to do the school run. As I said, I'm still together with my partner who met me when I was 24 years old. He never left me because he basically saw this young woman, her eyes, the woman that he met all those years ago. And he desperately fought to help me. We had a doctor involved in my story who brought me in, and it was an intervention, and she basically presented the facts to me by reading parts of the big book to me, the doctor's opinion, and also shared that she felt that I was an alcoholic. She suggested that we go to a meeting, and we literally found a meeting later that day. I was scared out of my skin, but I stayed. And the next day I kept on coming back, and I've been doing that ever since. What you told me at Alcoholics Anonymous in my second meeting was I finally realised that my dad was an alcoholic. I had no idea. I thought he was just a very unwell man and that he'd had a hemorrhage, but actually it was a hemorrhage relating to the consumption of alcohol. And it brought back a memory of him telling me that he would never drink again, that the doctors had told him he'd never drink again. And I knew I was at home because there was nowhere else for me to go. AA was going to be my home. And it hasn't been the easiest of rides or the easiest of roads. That first year was fairly chaotic. But in my second year, during the pandemic, I took it seriously. I did what my sponsor told me to do. I did all the actions. I joined home groups. I did service. I followed the steps. And, you know, when the world was full of purpose trying to find their way, so was I. You know, I found my way that year. And I haven't looked back since then. So, no, I'm so extremely grateful to these rooms and to these people and for my journey. You know, today I'm still living under the same roof with that same man who met me 30 years ago. You know, I set my child as a part of my life, you know, the family dog. I've got all the, you know, gifts of recovery. I can be there for my family when life is starting to get tough for them. And that is an absolute miracle of recovery. So thank you so much for listening, everyone. I do hope you've heard something today. It has been a real privilege to share my story. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jen. That was lovely. And I'm afraid that's all we have time for today. So thank you, Sally, Scott and Jen, for sharing with us and joining us in the studio today. And thank you to all of you who've been listening. We are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. here at Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757. Or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz, where you can find a whole raft of information. Now, could we perhaps all close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer?
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you, everyone.
Coming back, it works if you work at it.
Very true.
The noise is deafening in here. I can't see very clearly. Everybody's in the kitchen swapping recent horror stories. Getting my reasoning straight. Came here to loosen the reins and tripped up the stairs. It's crowded in here, that's when I saw him. He was 6'1" with a shirt undone, and I was dancing in the hallway. I heard his name and I met my fate, and threw myself across the doorway and said, dance with me, I'm begging you please. In the low light you look like a dream. Oh, come with me, I promise I'm sweet. And you're in the driver's seat. Like, dance with me, I'm begging you please. In the low light you look like a dream. Oh, come with me, I promise I'm sweet. And you're in the driver's seat. Ooh. I like to stay up late, waste time on arcade games, or we could go driving. Really don't mind, whatever you want to. 'Cause you're 6'1" with your shirt undone.